Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Demetra Gray Show. You guys, I'm annoyed. I was about to just make an episode about gardening, and I am going to talk about it because I have so many things to tell you about gardening. I want to share with you all the different things I've been doing, what I've been learning. I have been so happy doing stuff outside, and I want to talk about that too, and just the importance of doing things with our hands and doing things in our real lives as opposed to the internet. I'm not opposed to the internet, obviously, like in general. I think there is a balance, but I think I'll get into it. But I think the balance is just more intentional time spent on the internet and like way more time spent doing things with our hands in our day-to-day lives. So I want to talk about that. I have so much to say. So many things have been happening. But I need to start off by just telling you about this, like a little bit related, actually. I think I can tie them together. I've been emailing, you guys know my email sagas with different companies or different places where I feel wronged or like somebody is doing something that is wrong or unethical. So my latest one, and I'm referencing in past episodes, like not that long ago, a few months ago, I talked about my maximalist group in one of them. And then I talked about, there was like drama there. And then, I need to pull up so my computer screen does not do this pop-up thing. Okay, well, I'm talking. What was I saying? So I talked about like that happened with my maximalist group, and then I had that whole drama with Airbnb that I won, by the way. So this time, and Jordan is always like, why are you giving so much energy to these things? But you know what? The answer is that I think it matters, okay? I'm also drinking my coffee at the same time. It's decaf, but, well, it's almost all decaf. That's, if you hear me sipping, that's what I'm doing. So, and I have a lot of energy. I already spent some time this morning outside wheelbarrowing around, and now I've been emailing back and forth with this hormone testing company. It's called Prove. I hate it. I do not recommend it whatsoever. So I bought this hormone testing product because somebody that I had followed had talked about it and suggested it and said it was good. And it seemed to be like it tests your urinary hormones. And you do basically one test a day. And well, this is the claim. It tests your LH, it tests your estrogen and your progesterone. So it tells you, and the specific things, because there are many other things that do that, right? You can get cheap LH strips from the drugstore. If you don't know, LH is luteinizing hormone. It's the hormone that spikes and like tells your body it's time to ovulate. So you can kind of know when you're ovulating. If you get a positive LH test, you're like about to ovulate in the next day or two. So, but there's many things that do that. There's also other tests that test your estrogen. I don't even know how accurate they are, but most people are interested in progesterone. And I had had a different tracker that tested progesterone at one point because I wanted to make sure that I was ovulating. I don't know why I bought it. I think I bought the other one. It was called Mira when I was bleeding for a year and I wanted to know what was going on with my hormones. It wasn't that helpful, but I was just curious. But the purpose of Mira, it does test progesterone in the urine, but they're very specific to say that if you, like, it's only to be used to confirm ovulation, that ovulation happened. It's not a good test of what your progesterone levels actually are. And there's this whole kind of narrative online in like the health world that your progesterone levels need to be high for like a sustained period of time in your luteal phase to be fertile. And I think that seems to be pretty likely to be pretty accurate, especially with something like a Dutch test where you're testing, like in a Dutch test, typically you test your urine like multiple times a day throughout the day. And it kind of gives you this like 24-hour look at your hormone levels. But so the thing is, so I hope that this is not boring for people, but I think this is the, all of this is going to go into a much bigger lesson that I think is very important. So just stick with me. So on Prove's website, so I bought this and I bought like a 2-cycle pack. And they're pretty, they're decently expensive. I don't know. I think it was like a few hundred dollars at least that I spent for 2 like cycles worth of tests. And I did the first cycles last fall and I just didn't really get it. Like I confirmed my ovulation, but then my progesterone sort of like seemed to fluctuate. And I was like, I don't know. And then I just didn't use it again because I was like, I don't know. I'll use it after I've like worked more on my hormones and I'll see if there's a difference. And then I was just thinking about it again because I didn't know if I ovulated this month because I got sick. Like my LH spiked and then I got sick like that same day and then I had a little bit of a fever. So then this doesn't matter. My temperature was just very up and down and I couldn't tell. And I was like, did I ovulate or not? And I was like, oh, well, maybe I could use that test, the Prove test to find out. So then I ended up Googling because so the difference between me last fall and now is that I've become a lot more interested in the science and looking at the science specifically myself instead of just trusting what other people say. And so last September when I bought these tests, I just kind of like believed what they said on the website. And so on the website, it makes these claims that are like, they're like, it said one sentence specifically was like, studies show that testing progesterone in the urine in the morning one time is a good average of all of the levels of progesterone from the day before. So, and I had read before that your progesterone levels, like progesterone is kind of released in the body, I think, in like bits throughout the day. And like your progesterone level isn't just consistent in your body the whole day. And I knew that. And so I was like, oh, that's curious. Like it says that you can, like their test doing it one time in the morning and progesterone, what your progesterone is in the morning is a sum of all of your progesterone from the day before, and that it's an accurate way to read it. So it links, right? It says studies show, and it links to a study. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to read the study because I've started to do that now. So I click this study and I read this study and it says nothing about this claim whatsoever. It's basically, I believe, if I am not wrong, the first study, because now they've sent me many studies, and the first study they sent me, or the first study linked on their website, was simply a study that was comparing testing progesterone. I don't even remember I think it was in the blood. I don't even think it was in the urine. Testing progesterone compared to, actually, was it even testing progesterone or was it just looking at ovulation with an ultrasound? Because now I'm kind of blurring the studies together. But regardless, it was like comparing that to measuring basal body temperature. So the study had nothing to do with proving that testing your progesterone levels once in the morning, were somehow this average of the day's levels from before. So I write to them because I'm me and I was just like, I want to, like, what do you mean? Like, so, and I'm getting kind of pissed because I've seen this now. I've started to see this a lot. And so people will say like, oh, studies say this. And then they even link to a study. So you think like, the study must say this. And then you don't go look at the study because in general, studies are pretty overwhelming. Like they have all this jargon and stuff you might not be able to understand. And people don't want to sit and read studies. So they just are like, well, somebody says the study says this and they link to a study. So obviously it must say that. But then you read the study and it doesn't actually say that. And Kaya from Fundamental Nutrition on Instagram, who I have referenced before, turned me on to that with the vitamin D people. There's people in the holistic nutrition space. I haven't actually gone to look at this myself. I still need to, but she talked about how people are like, don't ever supplement vitamin D because of like these reasons. It depletes magnesium, it depletes whatever. And when you go to the website, it's like a Morley Robbins website that backs up this claim. She said she went and actually read the studies that they said were backing this up and that they were all bullshit. Like they weren't actually proving this at all. So again, I haven't actually gone to look at that myself, but she did all that. And I just thought that was interesting because I had heard over and over again for people just being like, vitamin D just does this. And she's like, well, actually, there's a lot more context around it. And I don't think like the studies these people are using to make this claim don't actually even say this. So with this company, I was like, this study, you can't. So this is where my like moral compass kicks in. And I'm just like, you cannot just make this claim and say that your product does this thing and that studies say that this is how it is and then link to a study but not link to a study that actually says the thing. Do you remember doing research papers in high school? This is like what I did with research papers in high school. I would like, you know, you just read the abstract and you're like, whatever, this is like kind of related. I'm just going to use it as a works cited so I don't have to do extra work. Are doctors still doing this today? Because this is absurd. So I write to them and I'm like very friendly and I'm like, hi, your website says this. I clicked on the study. The study doesn't say this. Can you give me evidence to back up this claim? And they're like, they write back and they say like, hi, Dimitra, very customer service-y. They're like, hi, Dimitra. Oh, wow. Oops. Like we didn't realize that. And, the study there we only linked to one study, but we actually have other studies that do back that up and like are bad that it's not on the website. And we'll be sure to put it up on our blog post as soon as possible. And I am not satisfied with that. Cause I'm like, no, like you don't get away with that easily. So I'm like, okay, you're saying there's studies. So I'm like, hi, I'd love to see the studies that you're referencing that do back that up. So then they write back and they only send one word. They write study and it's a link. So I click on this study. I'm like, okay, this is gonna be the study, right? And I click on it and it is a link to yet another study that does not say that whatsoever. It's only a study that's like talking about progesterone in general. And I'm like this. So I respond again. I'm like, hi, this study still does not back up this claim. And I'm still being friendly because I'm like, I don't know, maybe they do have this study somewhere, but like, I don't know how this is happening. So then she writes back again and she says, hi, Dimitra, our CEO sent me these two studies to send to you. So the CEO is like the doctor who's created this product. So she sends me two more studies and these are like longer, more involved, long papers. I don't know. I'm like fucking baffled. This has baffled me for like 3 days now because I don't know if the doctor is not reading the studies or if they're so in this like set worldview of the way they are interpreting things that they like really believe that these things are backing it up. So they send me these two more studies and I don't know, maybe they didn't think I would read them, but I did. And so I'm looking at this and I'm like, this also doesn't say anything about this claim. And not only does it not say anything about this claim, but on top of that, they linked me to this specific sentence in the study that said that progesterone levels, and this study is actually only talking about the blood, but it's saying that progesterone levels can fluctuate so much, anywhere from like 2, whatever the measurement is, like, I don't know if it's like grams per whatever, I don't remember the measurement, but it's like 2 to 40 within an hour. Like every hour your progesterone level can change that much. And so the study was basically like, there's no way to accurately measure progesterone unless you were going to do something like a 24 hour or 48 hour urine collection sample. where you're testing the urine at like many points over that period of 24 or 48 hours. I don't know if you've ever done a 24-hour urine kind of test, but I have, where you like collect your all of your urine for 24 hours. They do that. Or, and that's why I'm not sure about totally about the accuracy of the Dutch test, because they do, like, at least that is, you're testing many points throughout the day, you know? So they send me this and I'm like, this sentence literally says that your product is bullshit. Like, this this study is literally saying, like, you can't measure progesterone by just testing it one time in the morning. And so I write back and I'm like, hi, like, this is getting almost funny. Like, not only do these not corroborate the same claim, but they also specifically say, and I quoted the study in two different places, I was like, it specifically says that what your product is doing doesn't work. And so now this morning, somebody else wrote back to me. Finally, they like switched me to a new customer service person who's now signing off all her things in hearts. And I guess they moved me, because my last one, I was like, this is a, like, I want a refund now, because like, obviously this whole thing is bullshit. And it's like, you know, it's bullshit, right? It's like, if you can't back it up and you're making all these claims on your website, and I'm like, this, and I'm like calling it out, and they're not being like, here is the thing that says that this is true, like, that this is what this is based on, it doesn't exist. So I'm just like, I want a refund. Like, I can't believe I spent money on this. It is a scam. So this girl writes back this morning. She's like, hi, Demetra, here are more studies. And she sends me like 30 studies about progesterone. So I look at them. And I'm like, because, and I'm also like, these study, and then some of the things they sent me were like studies done using the Dutch test as an example, which prove is not, because they only test the urine one time. So it's not, you can't compare those things. Also, I was like, I just wrote back and I was like, none of these things still support this claim. Like, I'm not sure why you're sending me these studies. It's literally as if they're just like, here's like 30 more things about progesterone, just go away. And I'm like, no, this is a scam and I want a refund. And I also want to tell everybody that it's a scam, because what the heck? You can't sell, like, how can you be selling a product that makes all these claims, but all your claims are wrong? Like, oh my God, I find it so annoying. And so the whole lesson I want to tie this into is, you really just like, take with a grain of salt all of these things you see on the internet. Like, I have been talking about this sort of paradoxical nature of trying to heal in this day and age from anything, and like trying to find health and like more health and get healthier, when our whole medical system is like so messed up. And so of course people turn to these alternatives, right? And they turn to online stuff, and I think that's really useful. And like, I've learned a lot of things from people online that have been really, really helpful to me. So the online is not bad. It's just that I think it's like, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so it's like, when you start learning all these things about health, it's easy to just believe people, because what they are saying, and doctors, like, not just online nutritionists and whoever, but also especially doctors, and especially, like, you want to just believe people because you're like, well, they're saying that the studies say this, but then you go into the studies and you're like, well, do they actually say that? And that was the other thing about autoimmune disorders that Kaya did that I really liked, because she really goes through all the studies and breaks them down for you, and she links to all of them. And she was kind of proposing this theory that in autoimmune disease, the everyone, like the main mainstream narrative is like, your body is attacking itself. And she's like, well, if you actually look at the science, is that even certain? And it's like, when you actually look at it, it's not. And there are many camps by many doctors who are like, this isn't actually what's happening. Like the presence, because in an autoimmune disease, you have these antibodies typically that they say are like attacking certain parts of your body. But no one actually knows for sure that that's what the antibodies are doing. We know that the antibodies are there. They're present. But are the antibodies attacking or are they cleaning up? And so it's kind of like, it's like when you go deeper and deeper, it's like, is any of this, what is this based on? And this is why I think you see mainstream things like when they were saying years ago that saturated fat, I mean, some people are still saying that saturated fat is so bad for you. And then you go back and you're like, what is this based on? It's like, oh, a lot of this is based on things that aren't real, like aren't trustable, or like somebody made this theory, then everybody just took it and society went with it as a fact, but it's actually not really strongly backed up. So, oh my God, I just like, it makes me even more certain that just letting go of a lot of this analysis is a really important and key proponent of health, because it's just like, all of this, you can spend so much time obsessing and learning and all of that, but you can waste so much time doing that and not realize that the things that you're reading or the people that you're learning from actually don't fully understand the whole picture. So it's kind of like this, and I think this really big shift that I've been noticing in myself is this, and I don't want to make it sound like the learning this stuff isn't important, because it is. Like, I did that whole episode on healing your menstrual cycle because, like, I really think that learning the basics of physiology and nutrition and all this stuff really, really helped me heal. Like, it's been integral to certain aspects of my health. Like, it's like a part of the picture, but it's a small part of the picture. It's not the whole picture. And I've been realizing, as I've been doing so much outside, that I think I've been searching the last year, probably kind of my whole life to some extent, but like, I've been searching for like, what do I have to learn? Like, what is the thing? And not even, you know, people often say like, oh, people are just looking for this pill that will take it away. But for me, it doesn't feel like it was so much like, give me just the pill. It's just like, what is the thing I'm not seeing? Like, what's the thing that's going to change everything? And what do I need to learn to like learn more about what I'm not doing accurately so that I can... Like, if only I understood everything, right, then I could fix it. But it's like, it kind of, at some point, it's like, it becomes futile because nobody understands everything. And some people have a better understanding than others, but you can't even really know for sure who those people are. And then people are so certain. It's like a minefield. And I was talking about a couple episodes ago just how, in this sense, being in a cult has been very beneficial to me, because now I can see when things are culty. Like, I'm just a lot more suspicious and I'm a lot more hesitant of anything where it seems like this is the way and like this is how it is, because of my experience getting, just trusting and getting sucked into something like that in a different context. So yeah, all that to say, I have been feeling, as I've been outside, how I don't think that I need to learn more about like this molecule and that molecule and the way that these things interact. I'm like, maybe I just need to be outside. like, maybe I just need to be in the sun and move my body, but not do these things to, like, check off the list. Like, oh, I got my exercise in for today. Like, and I've been considering just what if it's a whole lifestyle change that happens when, instead of being like, did I get my light and did I get my movement and did I get whatever, it's like the whole way I live day to day needs to change. And I think that's what has been changing the past couple weeks. And I've been so happy. I cannot even explain to you. I've really noticed this shift in, like, it's become very, very obvious to me that when I go outside and I walk around our land and I do things, I move dirt, I touch the dirt, I look at what things are, like, what's gonna go where, and I wonder, and I'm walking around and I'm thinking, like, this is gonna have to be taken care of at some point, and, like, this thing, and I wonder what we'll do with this, and where am I gonna plant these things, and this needs to be filled, and, like, what should the next task be, and I can't actually focus on myself really at all. Like, sometimes, like, I wonder and things kind of pop in, like, I'm like, oh, this is, like, usually at the extent I think about myself is like, wow, this is so much better for me than sitting inside. But, like, I'm too preoccupied. Like, I have to make sure the wheelbarrow almost tipped over this morning. I've been afraid that, because our lawn, if you were to, like, walk around our yard, it's so uneven, it's so bumpy, and, like, there's just, like, divots and all these, like, holes. It's just, it really desperately needs to be evened out. I don't even know how to go about that. But at some point, someone, or me, if I know how, is gonna have to, like, smooth out our yard, because to wheelbarrow, it's, like, treacherous to go from my truck all the way down to the garden. It just is full of a lot of possible pitfalls. And literally, and so today I have had the thought that if this starts to tip over, because I've also started making the wheelbarrow a lot heavier, and I've had the thought that if this starts to tip, like, I'm not gonna, at a certain point I won't be able to catch it, and then it's just gonna dump the dirt, like, it'll be terrible. And today that almost happened. I hit a weird stone or something, and it rocked to the side, and then I was kind of on a hill, and I was like, oh no, I have to try to straighten it. But I didn't, like, it took a lot of strength. It was like I had to use all my strength to move it back to the center, but then if I didn't get over the next bump, I would have toppled. But I did get over it, so it was okay. I saved it. But it's, like, full of things like that, right? It's just, like, there's always, like, little problems to solve, like, the whole time. And so it's very satisfying, because it's just, it's a constant, like, doing things and feeling the satisfaction of having them done and looking at them and doing them physically and being like, I made that myself and I did that myself. And even just being outside in general, like, just seeing all of the things that are living and doing their own things, it's like, I feel like I belong in a, like, I'm just like, look at, I'm doing things, and the slugs are doing things, and the birds are doing things, and we're all, like, doing things outside together, and it's very fun. And so I've noticed very quickly that, and I don't remember why it started. I guess it started because the beds weren't going to be filled. So we have these 4 beds that are massive. They're just like, why would you ever make beds that big? They're 12 feet long and they're 4 feet wide and 3.5 feet high, I think, or 4 feet high. No, they must be 3.5 feet high, or maybe, I feel like they're more than 3 feet high. I don't know, but they're big. And, we've had other people kind of slowly filling them, because the bottoms, we decided to fill the bottom half with logs. I don't know if this was a good move yet. I have to see how the things all grow. But it's like, what do you fill this? Like, if you fill all of these beds with just topsoil, like, it's going to get pretty expensive. So it was like, what can we fill them with? It was like, we'll fill them with logs, and then over time the logs like rot. It's kind of like a, it's something like hugel culture sort of type of idea. So you fill it with like logs and then branches and then compost and then topsoil. But so I couldn't go get the logs. So we had someone else that was going to get logs and like chainsawing them up and then bringing them and then loading them in the beds. And so that took like a long time. She kind of did that like through the winter. And then as the spring approached, two women were like slowly sort of filling the beds with like more branches and then moving the compost. It was a big job, actually. I'm so glad I didn't have to do that job. It was moving our bins of compost, like finished compost, down to the garden. That would have, it was just, you have to like pitchfork it, and that was a lot of work. So they did that part. But then we had planned on like they were going to get the beds finished by the time we got home from our trip so that I could plant. But then that it didn't happen that way, and they didn't get finished. So what ended up happening was like three of the beds were full with compost, but they still needed a layer of topsoil. And you're supposed to have more topsoil than compost, I think. Like, I don't know how our things are going to grow. I'm a little concerned because you're not really supposed to grow in as much compost as we're going to be growing in. So I feel like that could either go really well or really poorly. But I'm like waiting to find out. And so then like the landscape, like they couldn't come back for weeks. And so it was like, if I want to plant, I'm going to have to do this myself. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll go get a load of soil. And I was like, maybe I'll just try it. Like, I'll just see what it feels like. And I started doing it. I was like, I could do this. Like, even if I have to go really slow, because I'm in a lot of pain. So like my wrists especially really hurt. They can't hold a lot of load. Like I can't like put my weight on my hands or anything. Like they are just, my wrists really probably hurt the most. But my right elbow also like can't straighten all the way. My shoulder hurts. So like I really hurt, but I was like, I think I could do it. And I found a way to kind of put the shovel under my arm so then I don't really have to use my shoulder as much. So I basically found a way to use the shovel and shovel dirt into the wheelbarrow. And then the wheelbarrow, I think, is probably actually good for my elbow because it kind of pulls it straighter. And then going down into the garden, like it hurts, right? But it's like, I hurt anyway being inside, and not moving actually makes it all worse. So I was like, this is good for me, and I'm just going to do this. And then I found that as I did it, I felt really happy. I was like, oh, I love this. This is really fun. And I was like, you know what? This is not that hard. Like, it's not going to take that long, like filling the beds with soil. Like, it'll take me some time, but I could totally do this by myself. And I've been playing country music from like 2000s and 2010s, because that was like more of the country music that I grew up with that I remember. And that's been fun. I have this like big playlist that I found, and I've been playing that, and so I know all these songs. And I just, it really hits a lot of spots for me in the best way, that are just like a lot of the best parts of my childhood. I grew up not on a farm, but like around farms, like more smaller town Pennsylvania, and like our school was directly across from a farm. And my first boyfriend worked on a farm, and I worked at the farm stand there for a bit. Like, I've always loved farms and the smell of farms and soil. And I've tried to garden a couple times. One time my boyfriend and I begged my mom to let me. My mom didn't want to have a garden in the yard. She thought it would look like, I don't know, I guess she thought it would look bad. And finally, I convinced her to let me make a garden. And I was like, my boyfriend was going to help me. He's going to like build a fence around the garden so the deer wouldn't eat it. So we made this whole garden, like dug up the soil, and he like made this whole fence. And then we realized that we made it in the shade. That part of the house got like no sun during the day. And so it was a disaster. We couldn't plant anything. And we just gave up on it. It was kind of sad. I guess we could have planted some things, but it just was like, everyone thought it was the dumbest thing, and I just never. I grew some tomatoes in pots, but that's kind of been my extent of gardening. Like, I grew some tomatoes here in pots too. My herbs tend to do really well. I have done herbs, grown herbs before. But vegetables, I don't know. It all just seemed very overwhelming. And also, I think another big thing that's happened is, and you've kind of listened to this happening in me if you've been listening to the podcast, because it's been this sort of evolution, I think, over the past 4 or 5 months, where I think I've fully embraced now the 1-3 human design part of me, which is like the type that just, for lack, like, you could put it in nicer terms, but basically just like messes up over and over again. And that's just how they do life. Like, that's how they learn. And I think I was so caught. I was just like, wanted to be different. And then I think something has happened in the last couple months where I'm just like, oh no, this is just me. And that's fine. And like, I'm allowed to just be that way. And so I think I've embraced that a lot more. Like, if you've seen, I've started my sourdough journey on Instagram. I've been sharing reels. And it was like everything was getting so overwhelming. Like, everything just felt so overwhelming with sourdough. Anytime I would look at anything about it, it was like people had these courses you could buy to learn all about it. And there were all these, like, measurements. It just seemed very intimidating. It was like, you have to learn all about it, and you have to, it just seemed like very fancy, I guess. I don't know. I just felt like I didn't know all the lingo. And so I was literally just like, you know what? How hard can this be? It's like mix it. It's fermenting things. And I have had I've fermented things before, but usually I choose to just do the things that don't require very much effort. So like, I just noticed that when something really needs a lot of effort, then I, like, not even effort, like more perfection, I tend to then avoid it entirely, because it just, like, I don't know. And not to say that I would never do this, but I guess I see making beer that way. Like, everything has to be very clean and very, like, particular. Like, it's just, I think it's a very, it seems to be a very sensitive fermented thing. Whereas I've always thrived making more things like sauerkraut and like fermenting vegetables in salt water and kombucha, because it's like, it's pretty hard to mess up, actually. I never sanitized any jars in my life. I've never had mold grow or it go bad. Like, it just works, and it's really easy, and you can play with ratios, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And same with canning, actually. I'm still a little hesitant with some canning, but I was so scared of canning for the longest time, because it just seemed like if you did it wrong and you didn't sanitize everything perfectly and you didn't do all the steps perfectly right, then you could get botulism and die. And it still kind of seems that way. But I have now canned some things, but I haven't, I just used clean jars. I didn't overly sanitize. Like, I didn't, I don't like things that require this sort of, I guess, like, super attention to detail. I am not a fan. That's not really how I work. So with the sourdough, I was like, I'm just going to mix flour and water together. And I'm just going to be, I think being willing to mess it up is such a key. And I was like, I'm just going to mix them together and see what happens. And then it bubbled and I was like, wow. And then I was like, and what I think is really amazing about it, because now finally, it took me 2 weeks, but finally, I then ended up reading a blog post, and I actually saw for the first time what sourdough starter was supposed to look like. I didn't even know what it was supposed to look like. Once I saw the texture, I was like, oh, I've been doing it wrong. So I figured it out. But now mine is like bubbling. It looks amazing. It's really doing well. And I'm so proud of it. But I wouldn't have even begun, like, if I had to do that the first time, you know? So, like, I just feel like I learned a lot of things. I, like, tried out. I'm still experimenting with it. I've been trying, like, just different types of flour and different types of, like, I just tried a bunch of different stuff, and I tried putting it in a warmer spot and then in a cooler spot. And I've just gone with my actual nature, which is just to do things that way. And I, so same with like the garden and filling, like, I'm just like, you know what feels really stressful is learning about soil and learning like all the things that each plant needs to grow and learning like the pH of the soil and all the things in the soil. And does my soil have enough of this and enough of that? And what should I plant together? And what should I not plant together? And blah, blah, blah. It just is like, it's too overwhelming. And it's just like, that is not me. It has never been me. What is much more me and actually seems to work a lot better is just like, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go buy a bunch of collards because we've been eating them a lot and loving it, and put them in the bed. I'm just going to have a whole bed full of collards. And so I did that. And then I bought, when I was at the farm, the place, I was like, they're selling all these beet seeds and or beet starts. And I was like, I'm going to plant these like I've never. And you might have seen my Instagram reel. It has over 2 million views. Isn't that insane? It just really went viral, which is, I think, is so funny because it was such an innocent little, like, I was at the store and I just saw 6 little beet plants. Well, I thought that there were 6, and it was like a 6-component little container. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm buying all these collards. Like, I'll just try 6 beets. Like, I've never grown beets. I'll just see what they grow like. I'll just see what it's like. I'll just kind of dip my toe in and like try it out. And then I got home and I went, and then finally I went to plant them. And I made room for the 6 little plants. And then I was like picking them up and I went to put one in and I was like, this is like a lot of plants in here. And I was like, no, but like beet tops do kind of like they have a lot of stalks on the top of one beet. So I was like, maybe somehow, but then I was like, it is a lot of stalks. So as I was like, I planted one of them in the garden and then I was like, let me just Google. So I Googled it and I saw an image of like someone separating beet sprouts. And I was like, oh no, I was like, all of these is one plant. And so then I went and I started separating them all and I had 90 beet plants. I was like, what am I going to do with 90 plants? So that was kind of the same thing. Then I had to like fill another bed more quickly. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put them closer together than it says because I just don't have, like, I just don't want to spend that much room on beets. And I don't even know if they're, some people in the comments were like, they're not even going to grow well because you shouldn't do beets as starts. And they were like, you got kind of scammed by buying beet starts and you should have just planted them directly. So I don't know. Now I guess next year I'll just plant beet seeds. But The thing is that now I have collards and now I have beets growing. So let me tell you what else I have. So my next plan, and I actually think I could do this afternoon because I filled the bed this morning. I finished filling the second bed. It's completely done. So I'm going to plant carrots and radishes. And I also, it occurred to me that I could actually plant more carrots and radishes in the third bed if I want, because then you kind of space them out, right? So they don't all ripen at the same time. Like maybe I could do something like that. So that's what I'm thinking. And then, although I think my carrots say that you're not supposed to plant them until late spring for some reason. So I don't know about the carrots. Anyway, but I guess you could probably fit a lot more radishes and carrots in a bed than you could beets. They probably need to be spaced less, with less space. So I'm excited for that. And then I don't have a plan, right? So everyone's like, you should plan your garden, have a plan for, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. So instead, I've just been like buying things and then being like, I guess I'll just figure that out when I get there. So then you know what my first step really was before even getting the soil? I built that bed. I built my flower bed because I found a packet of poppies. The poppies was the beginning of all of this. So at some point, I don't know, last year or the year before, I bought a package of poppy seeds. And these poppies, I don't know, I think maybe they're California or maybe they're Icelandic pop. They're just beautiful, these poppies. I don't know. They look like tissue paper and they're big. They're so pretty. And our neighbor sells them. And I was like, I could grow those. Like, I can't imagine anything happier, making me happier than having whole bunch of poppies like that in my yard. So I was like, I'm gonna plant these. And then I was like, there's nowhere to plant them. And I was like, well, there's space between these beds. And if I just had a little bed there, then I could fill it with soil and then I could plant things. And so I did that. I posted on Instagram about that. I found the drill and I figured out how to drill by myself, and it doesn't look the prettiest, but it's kind of uneven, but I made a tiny little bed to fill with soil. And so I planted my poppy seeds. And actually just today I saw that some of them were sprouting. Oh my gosh, I could cry. And I thought, I was like, am I sure it is the poppies? But I think it is, because there are multiple spots on the bed. So I did that, and like everything's just kind of built on itself. So I built, so the poppies are in the bed, and then I found a packet of sunflowers, and those seeds were pretty old. They're like a few years old, I think. But I was like, well, let me just see. And so I planted a row of sunflowers behind the poppies, and they are started to sprout. They started to sprout yesterday. Yesterday was a big sprouting day. Yesterday was the first day that I saw anything sprout. So my sunflower, two of them started coming up. And then now there are more today. And there's some poppies today. And so I planted those. And then I was like, well, like, I planted my beets and my collards, and then I was like, I found this packet of, like, wildflower mix, and I was like, where is this gonna go? So what I did, I don't even know if this is gonna work, but I just, I'm, because our soil that's on the ground is, like, very thick clay. It's, like, very dense. So I just took some topsoil, and I, like, made a little line of, I just kind of dumped some soil in a line in front of the flower bed, and then I just sprinkled the wildflower mix in there, because I think I've just bought a lot of seeds at past times because I was excited, but then I never planted them or didn't know what to do with them. So now I'm like, I'm just gonna use all these and see what happens. And oh, I also bought lettuce. I don't think my lettuce is growing very well, and I don't really know what to do with it, so it's being a little neglected because it doesn't look good. It's up on our deck, so I have to figure that out too, but it's like, it's okay. And then I moved so much compost around. I moved more topsoil. I like covered our herb garden in a bit more soil, and the herbs are always doing well. They're doing so well. But I planted borage in there. I don't know if that's how you say it. It has pretty blue flowers that bees really like. So I bought a package of those seeds and I planted those in there. And then there's a trellis that the past owners left at the house, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love sweet pea flowers. So I was like, I could grow those. And so I planted them in the middle of the herb garden, and hopefully they can go up the trellis. So I planted so many of those the other day. And then I don't know. So currently I have a lot of tobacco plants because somebody gifted me a tobacco plant either last year, the year before. And she gave it to me. It was like almost fully grown, and I planted it in the herb garden. I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't even look it up. I just put it in there, and then it bloomed and it made the most beautiful flower. I was like blown away. I was like, wow. And this tobacco plant is apparently, it's like 1,000-year-old tobacco from native people here. There's a man who he like has a seed saving business. So he sells his seeds that he saves them. So I bought a package of these tobacco seeds. I was like, I'm gonna plant tobacco. And so I planted them inside, and I just reused the flats that I had I bought the collards and the beets in. So I just like filled them with more soil, and then I planted the tobacco. Now I have so many tobacco sprouts, and I'm like, wow, now I have like, I must have 100 tobacco little plants, but I think I'll thin them out. But it's like, I'm going to have at minimum 15 tobacco plants. Where am I going to put them? I don't know. There's nowhere that they are going to fit. So I'll have to I'm going to have to figure it out. Where are they going to go? This is like the way I function best though. I also want to plant potatoes, but there's nowhere for those. So I might just, once the beds are filled, just make like a big hill of soil in front of the flower bed and then just plant the potatoes in there. So I'm just gonna kind of figure it out as I go. So then tomatoes, I've also started inside. Way too many tomato plants, but don't you feel, I just feel like when they start coming up, I'm like, I can't kill them. Like, look at this little plant. It's like trying its best to grow. It feels mean to like it has so much potential. It feels mean to take it away. So, anyway, we'll see what happens. But, the tomatoes are inside and those I'm gonna have to figure out where they go too. And I also want to plant green beans, but the problem is like, so I think one of our beds will be, I'll use in a couple months for squash, whenever those get planted, a month. But the problem is, like, some of the things I want to grow, tomatoes and beans, are too, unless I grew them in a downward fashion, the beds are too tall. Like, I can't go up. I'll never be able to reach anything. So, I don't know. I guess if I had like arches, I've seen people grow things in an arch, but which that kind of seems cool, but that's just, that requires more effort than I have to go buy things to make the arch with. Like, it's like, so I'd rather just, I feel like what I'm largely doing with gardening this year, besides getting truckloads of soil, is I'm just trying to use what we've mostly already had, either like seeds I already bought in years prior or and I don't know how long seeds are good for, but these ones are sprouting. And I did buy a few more. I bought the collards and I bought some more seeds because each time I go to the store to get more soil, I see all the seeds and I'm like yesterday I bought a package of cilantro seeds. I was like, you can buy one thing to myself. And I saw there was like this jasmine vine and I was like, oh, so that's going to smell so good. I would like to plant that. But then I was like, no, I think this is going to be too much effort. Like, it's probably going to die because I don't know how to take care of it. And I just shouldn't do that yet. So I bought a pack of cilantro seeds instead. And I think I'm going to try to plant them on our porch. And then I have more poppy seeds, but these ones are a different kind of poppy where it seems like you should plant them in the winter. I don't understand. I have to look more up about poppies because this seed packet is like, I don't know, it just read in a very confusing way of what to do, so I don't know what to do. And then I have I have a calendula that I think maybe shouldn't, maybe that can be planted now. See, the thing is, I have a lot of things to plant and I don't have places to put all the things. Maybe I could put some calendula in a bed. See, it's really, but it's all very exciting. And then, like, there's so much drama in the garden. There's so much, like, the slugs you might have seen on Instagram if you've been on there. I've been killing slugs with traps of beer. And actually, perfectly, sourdough discard mixed with water also attracts slugs. So I can use some of my discard to attract more slugs. And I've tested it and it does seem to work. I'm not sure if it works as well as the beer. So I don't want to get rid of my beer yet. But I've been, every day I go and I knock the slugs that are on the sides down into the beer so that they drown. But this is the thing. So I have hated the slugs for a long time just because they're gross. And sometimes when I'm walking around in the summer barefoot, we have so many slugs and I step on them and they're slimy and they squish under my bare feet and they're terrible. So I just don't like them to begin with. But then when I planted my collards, a slug ate one the first night. So I was like, I have to kill the slug. So I started putting the beer traps out and then they started dying in the beer traps and I did not feel bad at all. I caught so many that first day. It was disgusting. Now it's kind of declined. But I probably collected like 15 dead ones last night. So I go out at dusk, like right after it's dark. I like, when I could still see a little, I go out and I collect them all and knock any ones that are kind of on the edges into the beer. And that seems to work pretty well. Only one other plant has been eaten a little. But I think I'm mostly keeping them at bay. It's hard to say because I don't know how much they would be getting eaten without my traps. But it's working well enough and it is killing a lot of slugs. But something that's happened just the last couple days, I was telling Jordan this last night, is that I'm starting to find the slugs cute. Like, it's not, I'm starting to feel a little bad for them. Because, like, they're pretty unassuming, but I can't let them live in the garden because they'll kill my plants. So now, like, if I see one, I step on it and I squish it with shoes. And I feel bad about that, but they have to die. And so, but the ones that I can't bear to kill, sometimes during the day, I've seen slugs just, like, I don't know if they're resting or if they're eating, but they're just sitting on an open dandelion. And so it's like this pretty open yellow flower and then like a little baby slug just like resting. And when I look at it, I can't kill that one. It just looks so innocent and just so cute. And I'm like, you're not bothering anything. So now what I've been doing with those is I like pick the dandelion and I throw it very far away from my garden over the fence. And I don't know if that helps. Jordan was like, they probably can just come back into the garden, but I can't kill those ones. It's like sleeping on a flower. It just feels so mean. So, but I don't know. We'll see. I just have to protect, I have to protect my plants. The other thing I've been doing, so, it's just fun to, and, like, I noticed, too, let me go back to this first. I just noticed that, like, because Jordan and I both got sick, so, like, I'm still, like, I feel like I'm still coughing every so often. But last week, we were more sick, and I had a couple days where, like, I had been doing a lot of stuff outside, and then my sickness, like, I had a sore throat, and it, like, went away, but then it would come back. And then it would go away and I'd like go out and do things and then it would come back. So I was like, maybe I should just chill and like take a break and rest. So there was like a day or two where I didn't do as much outside. I really didn't do very much at all. And I was like, I'll just wait until my body heals. But then what I realized was like, I just got kind of moody, like sitting inside all day and just being inside and like kind of sitting around. Like I was just like, this doesn't make me feel as happy. And it just became very obvious. And then the next day I was like, I'm just going to go out and do stuff. And it's like, as soon as I start just moving my body outside, and I just feel like this is how we're meant to be moving. And I keep doing things that I think are not going to be a lot of work, but they actually are. Like yesterday I had to cut up all these branches and move them into one of the beds. And in my head, I was like, oh, I'll just kind of putter around the garden and like cut up these branches and move them and they're light. It'll be just so easy. But actually I had to bend over like hundreds of times to like, so it actually ended up being a lot of effort. Like I got sweaty because it was like a lot of leaning down and standing back up and cutting the branch and putting it in the pile, then leaning back down and getting another. It was just like a lot of up and down and up and down and up and down. But I was thinking and I was like, there could be nothing better for my body than this, like this kind of movement. And just like being outside and sweating and moving around and just doing these like twists and turns and yeah, it just feels good. And so like this morning, I was like, I've started to like want to go outside, even though I was actually in a lot of pain this morning. I think because I did a lot yesterday. I did a lot of like cutting yesterday, and so my hands, like my wrists and hands, like my joints just hurt. But I was like, I don't know, like I'm going to hurt anyway. So I might as well, maybe I'll just go do a few more wheelbarrow loads and just see how it goes. And so I did. And I felt so happy. I was like, oh, I love being outside and I love smelling the dirt and I love doing these things. And so it just makes me really happy. So I invite you to bring some of that into yourself, to your life, even if it's like just a sourdough starter or just plant a few seeds. It's very exciting. And the other thing I did, I set a lot of boundaries with my online time. So I set the screen time app on my phone. Like I turned it so that most apps on my phone are banned from like 11 to 7, I think I did. But then I also set my social media time to a half an hour a day. Which sometimes I go over, like if I make a reel, so it depends on the reel, but sometimes like my sourdough reels, I really like making them, but they take a really long time to like cut a video down into little pieces. So sometimes I'll go over the half an hour, but it reminds you every 15 minutes. So it's like, it's still really intentional. It's like, I'm just doing this and I'm like choosing to do this. And so it stops like in the last, I don't know, 2 weeks since I set that up, maybe it's been, I think I've only gotten caught up scrolling one time that I can remember, maybe twice, but like, and it's only been for like 5 minutes before I'm like, oh no, I'm wasting my social media time. Like, cause you know, you go on and it shows you something new and it's like, oh, this happened and I should find it. But it's like, if I only have a half hour a day, it's like, I want to spend that time posting my own things and like responding to people who are connecting with me. And then maybe like watching the stories of my sister, just like people that I love. And like, that's what I want to spend that time on, you know, not just endlessly scrolling. So it really has stopped that. So now it just feels like if I'm online at all, almost all of the time, it's just me creating my own stuff, which feels really, really nice. Yeah, so I just feel really happy and it's been really nice. And yeah, I've also just felt myself, like yesterday, I wanted to just be in the garden and I also wanted to read this book of poetry that I got. So I literally sat in the garden and I read the poems out loud to all of my plants and I was like, I can do this. Like, this is fun. I'm allowed to do that. I don't know. There's something where I'm just like, I'm allowed to do the things that I enjoy doing. And I think just noticing what actually brings me a lot of joy. And I've also found so interestingly that I had imagined that spending more time outside doing things like this would make me not want to be online, which in a sense, like, I don't want to be scrolling, but it's kind of paradoxically made me, like, I have a lot more I want to share, which is interesting and fun. So it feels like when I am online, I have like 8 different post ideas in my head that I really want to make, but I just like don't have a moment and I don't want to sit down on a screen to do them. But it's like I have all these things in my head and I'm like, oh, I want to do this, or I want to share this, or like this, and I forget about them. And then but it's just like it's made me actually create more. And even when I have calls with people, I've been coaching a couple clients here and there, and I find that like when I've spent most of my day outside, it feels really good to sit down with someone on the computer and just like be really present with them and support them. And it's like it really there's this nice balance that it creates, the online work. That's just nice to feel. And I think Jordan and I are both feeling it. He's been tending to his woodshed and his wood pile and moving wood around. And it's fun. It's fun to like both be outside together doing stuff on our land. It's just, yeah. And so I'm just feeling like there's a lot of potential and I feel really happy about it. And I'm just excited. I'm so excited to see how the garden goes, like what I'm gonna discover, things like aren't gonna go well. It's like its own reality show, but it's real life. And it's not dumb people doing dumb things. It's just like, it's literally life. It's like there's a quote, I might have said this over before because I liked it so much. In a book I was reading, it like quoted something else. And there was a poem and it said something about, it says, look to this day, for it is life. The very life of life. And I love that so much. And I said it to Jordan. And I said it many times. I love that little bit. Because it is. It's like this. And I think it's so fascinating to just feel how in the past I felt more like, oh, like all this wheelbarrowing, all this. It's like all these things I don't want to be doing that I have to do this. I wish someone else could just do. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to do any of these tasks or things around the land or things around the home. It's like, but it's like, these things are life. I don't know. And this is why I think homeopathy comes in so big, because I feel like it's like, what has caused this sudden shift? I think it's many different things combined. But I think homeopathy is a big part, because I think homeopathy shifts feel like this to me, where it just feels like you were like sort of in a dream and then like a layer has just been made clear. Like you put on glasses or something and you're just like, oh, what am I doing? Like, oh, I see it this way now. Anyway, I'm gonna go, but that's my garden update and life update. Yeah, I think lots of things are gonna kind of start to come together, so more soon, but yeah, there's a couple things I can point you toward. I wrote an article recently about like what I learned from being in the cult, what I would want anyone to know who has also left that same situation. So if you didn't see that, that's on my website. I'll link it in the show notes. There's that piece there. There's a couple new podcast episodes recently that have been really great. So if you just kind of scroll back through recent episodes, you can see those. The self-defense one was really good that I did with Jess, and the engagement one that I did with Jordan was good. Jordan and I are going to do another one soon and together. And yeah, I don't know. I'll see you online. I'll see you on here. But that's all for now. And I'll talk to you soon.